Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we answer life's meaningful and meaningless questions. Lovely to have you here. My name is Marcus. Sarah and Chris are here. How are you, my dears?
Very well. Thank you.
Oh, a clean sweep there. Now then, ladies and gentlemen, speaking as a British citizen in the Western world, there is a lot of political change and uncertainty at the moment. Don't worry, we're not going to get political. In the UK, there is a small matter of leaving the European Union, of course. We have a new Prime Minister in Boris Johnson, who, it's fair to say, is quite a divisive figure. In the US, Donald Trump has made a little bit of a stir since coming to power as well. In Brazil, Bolsonaro came in off the back of one of the biggest corruption scandals of all time. In the Far East, North Korea have been testing their new guns to make sure they work. And in Russia, Vladimir Putin presumably continues to ride around topless. Climate change is a big worry for the planet. There are millions of refugees worldwide. Gang activity is a big problem in many cities around the world. Hate crimes are on the up, and the British pound sterling is falling. So even if we fancy a holiday to get away from it all, it'll cost more. So then, this week, we're asking the question, is the news all doom and gloom?
Oh, flipping heck. After that list.
Evidently, yes.
Wow.
Sorry.
The mood in the room has just plummeted.
Yeah,
wow.
We'll pick it up.
Well, so to be honest, I work in the news.
Yes.
And I probably look at, scores and scores of headlines every day. Mm. And sometimes it can feel a bit relentless.
Yeah.
I do admit, you know, like you said, there is so much going on. We're in the middle of a climate crisis. It can sometimes feel a bit like, oh, flipping heck, is there anything to be optimistic about?
Yes.
I think the first thing that I always tell myself when I start feeling that way is you very, very rarely get a headline that would be something like, woman walks home after night out, is totally fine.
Yes.
Like, you don't hear about normal people doing
normal
things.
Well, I
want
to read that
story.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't. You know, it's like,
yeah, yeah.
And you just don't report on the normal, everyday, positive to neutral things that are going on.
I guess there's nowhere to report good news, is there? Not really.
I don't know. I don't think there's nowhere
to... As you said,
to...
I had a really good night last night. I mean, that's social media for you, really, isn't it?
Well, that, you know what? That is actually a really good point. I think definitely news outlets have started to see that good news is a thing that people want to hear about. A lot of outlets do their own kind of good news roundups, good news...
It's usually an and finally, though.
It is.
That was, traditionally speaking, it was kind of... And finally, a cat was saved after being up a tree for a couple of hours.
That is very
and
good
Mrs.
news.
Miggins has her buddy back or something like that. I am like, that is like a local Herald newspaper or something. Maybe. In Russia, a news site called City Reporter had a little go, and they only reported good news for an entire day. According to one of their editors, they lost 2/3 of their readership that
day.
Wow.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because those... you get those videos shared an awful lot on social media about kind of, you know, restoring our hope in humanity as well.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not like there's no appetite for it.
It's almost a response, perhaps.
Yeah.
Mm. But they're not traditional news outlets, would you say?
No.
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 They've not cottoned on to this yet.
No.
Well, I suppose, I mean, we've more media outlets at our fingertips than ever before, I'm guessing, because of obviously internet, social media and all that kind of stuff and so on. And younger people, I'm guessing, do digest the news differently today than they did, because traditionally people would read a newspaper and that's how you would get your news. But I think people have a more broader, more variety. I mean, I certainly do.
But we live in the information age now anyway, don't that's what they call it. And there was the University of Southern California did a research. It's older now, so 2011. And I think they were saying that we're so inundated with news that even 33 years ago, we would consume the equivalent to 40 newspapers worth of information a day.
How much, sorry?
40 newspapers worth of information. So that could be your friends and talking to things. So the amount
just
of information.
Just information coming into
exactly.
Your
so you wouldn't
brain.
Read 40 newspapers, but the amount of. Mm-hmm. And up to 8 years ago, it went up to 176 newspapers worth. So we're just so flooded.
That's mad. With presumably
information.
A tabloid, and not a broadsheet.
Yeah, exactly. But that's 8 years ago. And you think about how much...
Yep.
We are consumed by 24/7 news outlets, you know, instant access to information non-stop.
Well, think about if you're scrolling through a Twitter feed or something, your eyes are just sort of sliding over that stuff. And there is so much going in that you really are bombarded. And we're not, and you know, apparently it's actually changing the way that we read things.
Yeah.
That we are just constantly, it's going in. Mm-hmm. And it's no surprise, especially if what you're following is, again, it depends who you follow and that sort of thing. But if it is primarily news, you might start to feel a bit like, oh, flipping it.
But you don't think that's how fake news, or as Donald Trump calls it, fake news, fake news. Fake news.
That's a scarily good impression.
And that's where the impression ends.
Yes.
Okay. Because if you're right, if it's just Twitter and anyone can chuck any old headline out there, doesn't matter. People aren't, as the old expression goes, by the time fake news has travelled around the world three times, the truth hasn't even got its trousers on or something like that. Yeah. You know? It is true, isn't it?
But fake news isn't new, is it? I mean, it was propaganda and, you know, then it was probably spin doctoring and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in why we're bothered by it more now. Is it just a pure volume of information we're throwing at? So therefore you hear so much more bad news because of the volume, or is there other things at play?
Well, I saw in the BBC interviewed a psychologist, and they were saying, and many other psychologists and other types of people say, that we are drawn to depressing stories.
Well, that is a
which
thing,
is quite a depressing thought.
There's a saying in news, which, you know, people, outlets are trying to get away from now, but if it bleeds, it leads.
Oh, I've heard that before.
Yeah, because you know
have
what?
Have you ever said that?
No, see, I would very much try to get away from it. I'm not as well look at those stories. But
it's, bleed, it's
unfortunately,
bleed,
there is a thing of, it's maybe it's shock, maybe it's there's an element of voyeurism. I don't know.
Do you think they're often more compelling, aren't they? They think about the films we watch and all that. When we were talking about what gets us emotional, it is often the sort of the tragedy and all that kind of stuff.
But I think that word emotional, I think that our emotions are targeted more than our rational mind.
Ooh,
so our two driving emotions are I fear and I want. I mean, look at Love Island. I want to look like the person.
That is depressing.
I want to be that adulation. But also the whole show is built on fear of being rejected or being dumped. It's like, you know, constantly these are what we're targeted by is our subconscious desires and they're the drivers.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, it's called, there's an expression called negativity bias, which often psychologists use as a term for a hunger for bad news. And again, number of studies being done about this. And it said that people, they say, oh, we want more positive news stories.
Yeah.
But when these extensive studies have been done, it shows you that their eyes are drawn to the negative stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah. If you go through all stories and whatnot, if there's been a tragedy or a plane crash or something like that, that's where you look. Because I think it's because it's not the norm. It's almost, I get it, like if you feel, people suggest that if you feel safe and relaxed and happy, you engage less with the news.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like we're not interested in what is right.
Yeah.
You're interested if something's going wrong. Oh, hang, something's going wrong. I need to find out about that.
Do you think there's an element of kind of your worst fears being realised? Do you think like a plane crash or car crash, you know, like any kind of tragedy?
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of like, oh, it can happen?
Yeah, maybe.
It can actually happen.
Or is it, my life isn't brilliant, but there's far worse things out there. Like, does it pop us up a bit more? Like, oh my gosh.
Well, there's definitely an element of that. But I think as well, it's almost like freak show curiosity. And what I mean by that is, you know, we've all been through the British schooling system. Whenever there was a fight in the playground, everyone wanted to have a bleeding good look.
Yeah.
It's true, isn't it? If there's a fight outside your window,
and you feel horrible watching it, but you are drawn to it.
Exactly. You may not feel good. You may think, oh, that's lovely. His head's cracked open. No, you feel awful, but you are drawn to it because I think it's almost like some documentaries. You think of like Louis Theroux and his documentaries on the BBC or tons of documentaries on Netflix and so on, where if there is, you know, whether it be something really grim like heroin addicts or really something quite odd like, you know, beauty queens or something like that, it's when I say that freak show curiosity, what I mean by that is it's so different to the ordinary.
Yeah.
Most people are law-abiding citizens
who
don't experience tragedy, most people statistically. Mm. So when it does happen, it's kind of like, what? I don't understand that.
Yes.
There's, you know, people get these grim fascinations with things like serial killers.
Yeah.
And, you know, plane crashes and they become obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good kind of point. And also, you think about things like rubbernecking when there's a accident.
Yeah.
On the motorway. You know, everyone slows down. And
I used to think rubbernecking was some sort of dance.
We're
rubbernecking in here.
You know what? Why do people slow down? Why? It's that same thing, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to think it was because people thought, can I help in
any
way?
Is there anything I can
do? But that's
do?
That's clearly not it, is it? Because how many times have we asked someone else will phone? You know.
Speaking of documentaries, have you seen the Great Hack on Netflix about Cambridge Analytica?
Not yet.
No, I'm familiar with Cambridge Analytica. Yeah. In a like, I don't know anybody who works there.
It's fascinating.
Or they pay well.
It goes into that. I think they pitched themselves to various political campaigns that in America they had 5,000 data points on each voter. So they could put the information out there to manipulate the whole... I mean, we all know the story, but it's an absolutely brilliant documentary. Not just about weaponizing data, but actually how people are intentionally putting fears and desires out there to manipulate us into doing what they want or don't want.
Yeah. But does it... Do you ever watch the news and think, oh, I should change my behavior, or that makes me more concerned?
I think with the climate, I do.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well... They were saying, you know, there was the, I can't remember the name of it, the documentary about, it was David Attenborough, and had the turtles and the straws.
Yep, yep,
Blue
yep.
And
Planet,
they say that was, sorry, was Blue, Planet, Blue Planet. Blue Planet. Mm. And they said that that was a real moment of change for the British public in using plastic straws. So I think, you know, if we can use those sort of headline-making things to enact change, positive change like that, even though... I do like using a straw. I did buy some metal ones.
Oh, that's okay, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not killing the turtles. Don't worry.
Yep.
But I think that then if something can scare us into positive action,
many things I will accuse you of. But killing the turtles is not one of them.
Again, it's feeding into. It's a fear based thing, isn't it? It's the fear of the planet going wrong.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that being the underlying emotion that drives our action.
But
do you
not think? But sometimes the news is ramped up, obviously. So terrorism, for example.
Yeah.
Aren't you more likely to be struck by lightning than be caught in a terrorist attack? Yes. Or something like that. So a lot of column inches are dedicated to something which perhaps is maybe not necessary. But with, say, climate change and all the stuff happening to the planet, they need to ramp it up because they need to almost say to people, no, you really need to get this, people.
This really will affect you.
You should be afraid of this.
Yes, I understand that everyone's desensitized to certain things. Yeah. And that's another problem, perhaps, people being desensitized. Because, again, if you think about, you know, in this country, we have, you know, Comic Relief and Children in Need, great charitable causes that go to stuff at home. And in Africa, Comic Relief in particular... back in the day, I think if anybody saw any pictures of the poverty in Africa, it would be like, oh my goodness, I have to give and donate. Whereas now, you need to know the story. You need to know a bit more, because that is an example of being desensitized a little
bit. But also, there's with that sort of stuff, you're having to change the way the stories are told because there's compassion fatigue that kicks in now.
Yes.
A lot of the research would say, don't put pictures up of poor people in Africa because that people turn over now.
Yeah.
That they don't want to see that. They, as you said, they actually want the good news story or solution. I'll give to a solution, but actually that's too upsetting for me. And again, I wonder if that's because of the condition that we're in nowadays. I can't deal with those pictures because it's too much.
And actually
the world feels too much.
Well, and sometimes those in the particular African countries actually say that does us a disservice as well, because we're not, you know, we don't need the whole white saver thing and all that kind of business, you know.
Well, like... It's funny you're saying that, kind of with going back to the turtles and, you know, David Attenborough.
We
and all
know you didn't kill him.
Honestly. But like, I think...
I've got these horrible images of Sarah killing turtles now.
I'm about the same size as a turtle. So I don't know who would win in a fight.
You're like tapping on his shell trying to get him come out.
They wouldn't catch you.
But I think... So, you know, we see all these pictures and videos of, you know, people whose villages are flooding and all their crops are getting ruined. You know, the climate crisis is absolutely devastating their lives. But there's something about seeing the turtle with the straw that was the turning point for people. And like,
interesting,
you know, while I think that's quite sad, but... You know, like I said, I think you've got to utilize it where you've got it. And
well, it's weird, isn't it? Because going, don't want to go over sort of terrorism or anything like that, but when you had all the news coming out of the so-called Islamic State in Syria and that part of the world, obviously horrific stories, not even imaginable. But something that really struck a chord with people, I think, was when they started to blow up the ruins. The old ancient ruins.
Yeah, now they've gone too far.
It
felt like
that.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At that time.
You're destroying our history, which is terrible.
Because I think people are desensitized.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, they've killed a lot of people. Yeah, we sort of know that now. What they've done, what to the ruins?
Yeah.
Mm. And I'm not sort of having a go if you have that conviction, because it's not an independent thought. Clearly, people have not thought, I now don't care about people. I now care about old ruins more than people. That's not what's going on. But it just shows you the cycle of news and everything, the effect that it can have on people. We often hear the phrase bad news sells, don't we?
Yes.
I suppose the great debate, do the public get what the public want, or are we fed the stuff by our media overlords?
I think that's a complex one, and it probably depends from outlet to outlet.
Yes.
If you are...
Are you listening, Mr. Murdoch?
if you are a outlet which bases everything purely on what's going to get read, you might be... you shouldn't be, but you might be led to pursue that and go, well, I know that having these horrific stories about people in horrific circumstances, which, and I'm not talking about stories shining a light on something and, you know, exposing corruption or exposing, I'm talking about ones which is kind of just exploiting it almost, just because you know it's going to get clicks.
But you, as you say, work in the field of news and... I've certainly written a lot of journalistic pieces and so on, and had your fair share there. Would you have, when you were going to write a story, are you thinking this is what, would it influence you what the kind of mood was at the time, or would you happily take something from left field and think, I don't know if people will like it, but I think this is a story worth doing? Do you see what I mean?
I think...
Or did you ever get to the end of doing a story, I think, oh yeah, you put loads of research into that, blah, 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 and people were just a bit like, yeah, but I'm not really interested.
Oh, I think every journalist has had that, where you put your heart and soul into something, you think this is going to change things, this is going to really make a difference, and nobody reads it. Unfortunately, that is part of the game, but that doesn't mean,
but
you know,
you
shouldn't keep doing it.
Do you mean no one reads it when it's out there, or it doesn't even get out there?
Like, oh, no one reads it when it's out there.
Okay.
But, you know, that is where... It is important in the news to have that balance of shining the light on the bad things whilst also saying, hey, look at this great, you know, campaign or this great charity that's doing this brilliant stuff, or these people who were having a terrible time and now look how life has changed. Mm-hmm. And aren't they nice to read when that happens?
They are.
But it's interesting you say about, do people get what they want, or are we fed?
Yeah,
you know, this stuff, because there was a tweet last week about the two pages of the Sun, the one in England and one in Scotland, and about Boris Johnson, and it was Boris Johnson's son, and his picture was the Sun, and how life in the UK was going to be sunny now he's in charge. And in Scotland, the Scottish Sun on the same day was all about Calamity Johnson's going to ruin it all.
Interesting.
So again, they were probably playing to the crowd somewhat. Mm-hmm. But then we also know with the same publication, that they've not really been bought in Liverpool, have they, since the
Hillsborough
disaster. Tragedy, exactly. Yeah. Because of the way that they covered that.
Mm-hmm. The lies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the vicious lies.
Yep.
And actually, that region was one of the few that voted to remain in the UK, even though...
Into the European Union.
Yes, exactly. Yes, sorry. So it's interesting, again, how are they feeding us and influencing us? Mm-hmm. The argument is yes.
It's not an exact science, is it?
No, exactly.
But
yeah.
So do you think it's a more positive thing that people spread their, where they get their news, over different outlets, perhaps? Because again, nowadays when I talk to people, especially younger people, seldom do you get people say, I'm a Sun reader, I'm a Guardian reader, I'm a Daily Mail reader, or
you can
Telegraph.
It's the online much now. News.
Yeah, of course.
I used to.
And I would have thought the same in America. I would have thought most young people say, take New York City.
Yeah.
Because the New York Times is the only one I can think of off the top of my head in terms of papers. You know, I wonder if your average young person in New York is, oh, I'm a New York Times reader. There might be online a bit, but I reckon, and especially with your news app on phones, it serves up loads of different.
I used to work in communications when I was at the UN, and I would every day read as much as I could. And it was really interesting. You're kind of reading the same stories from the sort of right wing to the left wing as well. And that, I always thought, I'm relatively unique because I'm trying to read all of them.
You're
and not
special,
just,
Chris.
I'm not though. But, you know, my own.
And as a result, he's a centrist.
Wow. Yeah. But it was interesting how, you know, I don't think we do. I think we just gravitate to our favorite publications all the time.
Yeah.
Unless there's an interesting headline which we see posted on social media. Mm-hmm. Then I may go over and read another publication. But I don't think we are that balanced. I still think we just go to our go-to sources of information.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, something you were touching upon earlier, Sarah, I'll go back to that, because the news is about what's going on rather than what's not been going on.
Mm-hmm.
So as you said, you don't say, oh yeah, hurrah, loads of commuters made it home safely today, something like that. But there are stories of bad situations being turned around, or how things are improving from, you know, from a bit of despair to hope. And I think those stories are ones that people like. And I think those stories, to hazard a guess, might be a little bit more commonplace now. Again, because on social media, in a sense, we sort of feel like almost we can share news now.
Mm.
Of course, we haven't typed up the story, we haven't done any research, but we can usher it along, can't we? And I know that has its problems, you know, like the echo chamber effect,
yeah,
and so on. But, I mean, one story in the last few days, or depending on when you're listening to this, but certainly at the time of recording the last few days, lots of people sharing the story that happened at the much talked about and scrutinized US-Mexico border. That someone had installed seesaws in between the bars so kids from either side of the border could play with each other.
Oh, I thought it was so nice.
Which is, even if you know, again, we're not getting political, and we couldn't vote for the US elections anyway, but I think no matter what side of the fence, pun intended, yeah, that you fall on, isn't that lovely? Isn't that a bloody lovely thing?
I think it's sad that it had to happen.
Yeah, of
course. But you know
the
what?
Response.
Like that is such, yeah, a heartwarming response to something, and it's those, you know, like you were saying earlier, Chris, like gives you a bit of hope for humanity.
Yeah,
I think it's true, because if we're going to delve into it a little bit, I understand why there's a border. You know, outside of, unless you have a sort of free roaming place like the EU, I understand countries have borders, fine, I get that, but that border has been so politicized, and just to see this, the kids playing on either side of the seesaw, and I believe it's an idea that's been a few years in the making anyway, but that kind of feeling that governments can be play silly buggers with each other and be very firm and, yeah, so on and so forth, just let the kids play.
Yeah.
And even sort of, I remember, you remember 2017, where it was just, it was terror attack after terror attack. It was,
yes,
it was awful, and I was a reporter at the time.
Right.
Oh my goodness, it was grueling. It, mm-hmm, really, really was. But the thing that really lifted my spirits was every time something like that happened, the local people just responded brilliantly. People were saying, "Right, does, yes, anyone need somewhere to stay? Come,
yep,
to mine. You know, I will. Where can I go and donate blood?" People were just absolutely at their best. They were doing exactly what kind of neighbors,
yeah,
and people who live in the same city, and it was so heartwarming, and that kind of thing for me is a real light in those horrendous circumstances.
We hear more, yeah, about that stuff now, I think.
We do,
I remember when the Grenfell disaster happened, and I worked in a church office at the time, and we were inundated all day long,
yeah,
with people saying, what can we do?
Yeah.
And we weren't near them, but there was almost like people wanted to help and they didn't almost know where to go, so they'd ring their local church.
Yeah.
And like one businessman just rang us up. He had a relationship, I think, with the vicar in the church, and said, whatever they need, I'll buy it. So
right,
like lorry loads of water or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But as you said, actually, the horrific stories can bring about a fantastic response within people, mm-hmm, to band together, to go, mm-hmm, we're more than the sum of our parts, or, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, but let's come together as humanity for some good cause.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Absolutely. Is that your Mr. Universe speech?
Yes, exactly. I won't kill turtles.
Yeah, yeah. But government, governments, start with that.
Yeah.
That's your opening,
yeah,
gambit. No tortoises will die whilst I'm Mr. Universe. Governments can do good things as well.
Really?
Talk about, believe it or not. Now, I'm recently in Ethiopia. Now, I don't know anything about Ethiopian politics, okay? So if,
okay,
their government is a bit
we
naughty,
won't quiz you,
or they, if this is a distraction method or something like that, then please forgive me. But this story in isolation, I think, is good news. Now, we mentioned the climate change and all the other business and so on earlier. But recently in Ethiopia, officials there say that they have planted over 350 million trees in a single day.
What?
Which is believed, wow, to have been a record.
How?
They got everyone involved.
That's incredible.
Isn't every single person in the country
incredible
had to plant one.
Yeah. Now, bearing in mind, they'll take a while to
yes, grow. Yeah, yeah. Do they literally just chuck loads of seeds down?
I think that's what it is. But of course, Ethiopia, they've had a lot of drought and stuff. So it's a big issue. So on a global scale, more trees is always a good thing. But of course, on a national scale, in terms of Ethiopia, it was a big thing as well, because the UN said Ethiopia's forest coverage declined from 35% to around 4% in the 21st century. So it's a big need in the country. So again, without getting into Ethiopian politics, because I haven't got the faintest idea where to begin, finish, or middle, this seems like it needed to be done anyway, no matter what the government are doing. But yes, of course, the effects of deforestation and climate change, it will help with those things.
Well, in the Philippines, that students aren't allowed to graduate unless they plant 10 trees.
Wow. Yeah. There you see. Get the trees planted.
Exactly.
It's like, mum, I'm sorry. I really, really need to go out and do some tree planting. Yeah.
Can you imagine that? You've got, I've got my first.
Yeah.
But I can't dig. So that was a waste of time.
Yeah, exactly. You're about to chuck your hat in the air. Hang on a minute.
Wait a minute.
That was only 9 trees.
Yeah.
You slacked off at the last one. The seed didn't go in the ground.
That was a bush, not a tree.
Exactly. And then, of course, if anyone's concerned by plastics, a teenager from Ireland won an International Science Award recently for coming up with a way to remove microplastic from water.
Great.
Good news, people.
Good news.
The good news is out there.
It's there.
It is there. But I think that's the key. I think what we understand that, especially if you're a news outlet, you can't just suddenly go, right, we're going to ignore bad news.
Yeah.
That would be irresponsible.
Absolutely irresponsible. However, within bad news stories, sometimes the response can be good. And also, you can also, some crime rates are going down.
Yes.
I remember Darragh O'Brien once saying, that he didn't like the fear-mongering that some news outlets talked about, and he started talking about one in which it kept saying, yes, I know that crime rates in this area are going down, but the fear of crime is rising. Mm. He said, the fear of zombies could be an all-time high. It doesn't mean to say, I don't really agree with him at that point,
Well, the thing is as well, slow change is quite hard to kind of put into headlines, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, have you heard of a guy called Hans Rosling?
No.
He wrote a book fairly recently, which I haven't read, but I'm told is very, very good. It's one of Obama's favourites, called Factfulness.
Okay.
And it's all, I think it's 10 Reasons Why Things Aren't As Bad As You Think They Are, yes, or something.
All right.
And he wrote an opinion piece for The Guardian, and in it he said, the silent miracle of human progress is too slow and too fragmented to ever qualify as news. And I thought that was a really nice way of summing it up, in that things, sure, there are many things which are going badly, but we are making progress, mm-hmm, and it's happening.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. So things like infant mortality will be down. Poverty is actually decreasing across the world, mm-hmm, but it's almost too slow for us to appreciate.
Exactly.
Because we want it now. I want everything now. And
Well, to end with this, the piece researcher John Galtung pointed out that if a newspaper came out once every 50 years, it would not report half a century of celebrity gossip and political scandals. It would report momentous global changes such as the increase in life expectancy, stuff like that. So, yeah, well done there. We've come to the end of our time, Chris and Sarah. It's been an absolute pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, do email us, show@aqqapod.com. We will read out some of your questions on the show in due course, and may even dedicate a whole show if we fancy one of them in particular.
There's some juicy ones coming in.
Absolutely, but thank you for those who have emailed in already. We will get round to them. Follow us on Twitter @AQQAPod. You can tweet us your questions as well.
Please do.
Yeah, and get all the updates. And sometimes when we talk about things, we'll tweet your pictures or little videos and so on. You can still see that one of me celebrating England's penalty shootout
that's
win.
Gorgeous.
Absolutely. That was a good news day.
That was brilliant.
And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, give us a rating and a review, because Sarah, you like ratings and reviews, don't you?
I love it, as long as it's a nice one, though.
Yeah, okay. Yes. If you like the show, do that. Presumably, if you didn't like the show, you've stopped listening.
They won't have made it this far. They don't know what to do.
Exactly. Yeah. There we are. Answerable questions with questionable answers. Chris, thanks very much, pal.
Thank you,
Sarah. Pleasure as always.
Many thanks.
We'll see you next time, people.